Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
Advocate Demisa Nsebeza has a long history of political activism.
It could never have been the agency for the reconstruction of South African society.
Always an independent, outspoken opponent of apartheid, he has retained these qualities in the new democracy, irrespective of how politically unpopular it may have made him. Born in the Transkei in 1949, he spent much of his younger life in the vortex of political turmoil. He was imprisoned while a student at Fort Hare in the 70s. And managed to complete his law degree in jail. He was also detained during the 80s. He was appointed a commissioner of the TRC in 1995 and elected head of its investigative unit and its witness protection program. 20 years on from the first TRC hearings and 17 years since the handover of the first volumes of the TRC report, how far does he think the country has moved towards reconciliation?
There was a time that I thought we had moved towards the desired goal. And probably it was because of the charisma of Mandela. Because however much people may want to discard the personality issue in geopolitical affairs, there is a lot that personalities can do. Mandela was identified closely with an attempt at reconciliation. All the things that he did. He and Tutu going out into the street whilst this topic was still being debated, wearing Springbok jerseys, almost defying the entire group of black people who felt the Springbok in the way, the Springbok jersey in the way in which it had been identified by previous apartheid order politicians. No, this is a white man's. This is a white man's jersey. If you want to have your own rugby players, you can call them the Leopards.
Even those who felt very strongly muted their protests because of Mandela and Tutu, he says. But that spirit must be tempered with the realism that emerged in the TRC. One man who testified in Grahamstown said he understood where Mandela was coming from, as he too had been in jail, although not for as long.
But the difference between me and him is that since he left prison, his conditions of life have improved. So from that position, I think he is able to preach reconciliation. But I am not in that position. I am a member of the organization that is calling for reconciliation. I understand why there is this call. I embrace it. It's, you know, it's the direction that we are. But, you know, I have a struggle with this notion of reconciliation. Because not only am I not employed, I am unemployable. And I'm unemployable because I spent time in jail, and whilst I was in jail, I lost the opportunities to advance. Now I come out, here I am, I'm not able to get employment, I don't have any qualifications. But what is more, the very people who were responsible for us being in jail, because we came with this sunset clause, which gave them the option to become instant millionaires, they are now rich. They are going on with their lives, and I am wallowing in poverty with no chance.
And reconciliation was soured when former torturers escaped all accountability. Some have even been exposed as doing work for the new government, such as Lieutenant Stephen Whitehead, one of the policemen who interrogated trade unionist Neil Agate, who died in detention. Newspaper reports have alleged he raked in millions from consulting work for SARS.
I mean, really? Eh? So something is wrong. Something is wrong. That's just one case. Why has this reconciliation been one-sided? Why has it been the victims who have been expected to have this generosity of spirit?
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Sunday, June 19th, 2016. So I have been told the audio segment that we started the broadcast off with, as I've been saying for a couple of weeks now, it is the 20-year anniversary. Excuse me. Oh, yeah, correct. There's so many anniversaries right here at the solstice as the seasons are changing. But it's the 20-year anniversary of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in South Africa. So they've been having a lot of talks with people who were members of the commission and or people who were fighting against formal apartheid, white supremacy in South Africa. That was Dumisa Ntebeza, hope I'm saying his name correctly, but the sentence that he concluded with in terms of why the victims have been asked to have this spirit of forgiveness and reconciliation, why is it that the perpetrators have not been asked to do the same? And most importantly, I thought when he was talking about Madiba, Nelson Mandela, and why he could, before his transition, why he could be more so about quote-unquote reconciliation, forgiveness of the white terrorists who had been plundering, terrorizing black people in South Africa. His situation improved after he was out of greater confinement. 27 years, but at least you could say that his situation improved. For the bulk of black people in South Africa, that was not the case. Their situation did not, has not improved. Yet we continue to throw around the banter, the rhetoric of reconciliation. Very common. Even before we get to the Global Sunday Talk, just as I said, it's so many anniversaries. So it's the 20-year anniversary of the TRC, Truth and Reconciliation Commission, 40-year anniversary of the Soweto uprisings, 50-year anniversary of the March Against Freedom, James Meredith in Mississippi, 1-year anniversary of the Charleston, South Carolina massacre. That's just things that I know about, having not even researched to see everything that has taken place in this period, in the middle of June. You know, how far you want to go back, but lots of things, historic things, have happened as it relates to racism, white supremacy. This is the Global Sunday Talk on racism. Always look forward to hearing from folks all around the world, COWS listeners, to hear their thoughts, views, suggestions on what we can, should be doing to replace white supremacy with justice. Certainly you are invited to dial in wherever you happen to be. The number 641-715-3640. And the code is 564-943-pound. That number again, 641-715-3640. The code is 564-943-pound. Press *6 if you would like to participate. Let's see, I believe we should have with us, we have our caller, we have our on cue, our caller in Austria. I think we have Mr. Fox, and I think Andrew, I think all of them have been with us on the program before. Mr. Fox and Andrew, both in the UK, as I said, and we have our caller in Austria as well. Are the three of you all with us?
Yes, Gus, good to be with you.
Right on, that was Andrew.
Yeah, as well, Gus.
Right on. And how did you, that was our caller in Austria, how did you want us to refer to you, sir? Our caller in Austria, how did you want us to reference you, sir? Still, I don't know if it's me or not. Can you hear me? Caller in Austria, can you hear me? Or I might even have my country's a tad off. The male caller that just spoke, not Andrew, caller that just spoke, how did you want us to refer to you, sir? How interesting. Maybe he can't hear us. Mr. Fox, are you with us as well?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me loud and clear?
Yes, sir. Can hear you well. Our caller in Canada is with us as well. I will open his line up. As folks know, I try to get all our folks that are in different spots of the world to get them first, whatever views they have, issues we want to talk about, and then just add in people from wherever else they happen to be calling in from. I certainly, at least for me, I was very curious to hear how the Orlando shooting has been talked about outside the states, the way that that's been talked about, especially issues around what they call gay rights or LGBT issues, as well as the one-year anniversary of the Charleston shooting, if that was mentioned at all internationally, especially given all the attention on the attack in Orlando. But before I get to that, just anything that any of you all wanted to touch on, any observations, anything you thought was important before we get started on other issues?
May I speak?
Yes, sir. Just which caller is this?
This is Silent Warrior from Norway.
Gotcha. Norway. I was messing up my areas of the world. Silent Warrior. Good to hear from you, sir. Proceed.
Okay, you thought I was from Austria.
I'm a victim of racism. My apologies.
It's all good. One thing I thought was interesting was how this event was timed to occur the week after Muhammad Ali's funeral. So after a prominent Muslim man who's non-white, who is famous for refusing to go to war to kill other non-whites. No Viet Cong ever called me nigger. And he's willing to make sacrifices, fame, and fortune. Unlike, he's like the polar opposite of someone like O.J. Simpson. That Muhammad Ali actually defeated the U.S. government, and then while he was, for these 3 years, when he was going around, when he was couldn't compete, he was going around from campus to campus and presenting his case to all of these people, including lots of young white people. I read that Muhammad Ali is credited, that some people think that he is responsible for causing the draft to be canceled. The draft for, you know, to get young people in America to join the military. That as he went around fighting his draft, that by, you know, the support for the war went down and they decided to cancel the draft in case they had more people continue to do as he did. Now you've got this war on terror, which is targeted towards non-white people who identify as being of the Islamic religion. And before Ali's legacy can, like, you know, be examined in any great detail, we have the Orlando shooting come up afterwards in Florida. I thought that was really interesting, well-timed. I've seen some reports in the news media that talk about multiple shooters and how the shooter's father was connected with, might have been connected with visiting with the State Department. It looks to me as another false flag. Also, I see I'm beginning to notice how possible false flag events are being coordinated from one side of the Atlantic to the other. So you have this Orlando Putin, and then on the other side of the Atlantic in England, you have this this killing of a young white woman who was pro EU, tried about keeping the English country in the European Union. And that's interesting because, you know, England has had, with their membership in the EU, they have greater migration occurring into the country. And England is one of the countries in Europe or around this side that has had the most amount of non-whites immigrating to it. And of course, as you have more non-whites, you have more increase. You know, they seem to become less tolerant of. Then they become more blatant. But that's my observation from this side of the pond, that the Orlando shooting is a possible false flag, and that if so, it was timed perfectly after Muhammad Ali's death.
Fascinating. Let's see, either Andrew, Mr. Fox, did either of you have commentary you wanted to share, just any observations before we get into some of the other topics? We'll get our caller in Canada as well.
No, I'm fine at this moment.
I don't think that was Andrew. Mr. Fox, anything you wanted to share before we get started?
No, I'm good at this moment.
Right on. Our caller in Canada, anything you wanted to share before we move into other topics?
Well, there's one thing that actually kind of intersects with South Africa a little bit that happened here in Canada recently, where we had South African firefighters, black South African people, who came to assist because there was a massive fire in one of the Canadian provinces of Alberta, I think in the city of Edmonton. And the Canadian government did not want to pay them properly, accurate wages at all. And so, but it's very interesting how this is being portrayed in the news, in the mainstream news. Race is not even brought up as a problem, which, you know, that's just white supremacist news media doing what it does. That's the most significant thing in Canada. And then, of course, white people in the area, in the town that I'm from in Brampton, I mean, the town that I'm from, which is, it's kind of like a suburb outside of Toronto. So, like, you have Toronto, then you have the GTA suburbs, and Brampton's one of them, where we have a rise in South Asian populations, and white people are not very happy with that here, because Brampton is about now, I think, 48% South Asian. When I say South Asian, I mean like India, Pakistan, that kind of region, but it's predominantly India. And one of the things that I think white people tend to not like brown people here in the GTA or in Toronto, I use like very loosely, like black people, is that with the South Asian people, is that they do things more for themselves, and they're not as, they don't seem to seek quote unquote integration as much as, say, black people would in Toronto. And I think that intimidates the heck out of them. So they're upset with what's going on in Brampton. So there's been a rise in hate crimes, and the housing prices in Brampton are really relative to other suburbs, even though there's nothing really different. And that's about it for the month of June in Canada.
Wow. I saw that.
Hey, hello?
Oh, yes, sir. We can hear you. I saw that they had a report on South African radio. They were talking about this pay dispute with the firefighters that went over to help fight against the fire. I was even thinking someone has said regularly not to help white people, but that to go halfway around the world to help them with this natural disaster, and for some reason you are not given the same compensation as other individuals who happen to be white, and you don't get the same pay when you have come halfway around the world. That is system of white supremacy for sure. I think we nabbed all of our international folks. I will weave in, bring in our U.S. folks as we nab some of the things that I want to discuss, if there are other issues that you all thought were important or you wanted to talk about as well. I think Silent Warrior. Folks could watch the background noise. That would be grand, because we do hear all the button punching and other stuff that's going on. I think it was Jo Cox that was mentioned. That was the white woman. She was in her 40s, member of parliament in the UK, who was shot and killed this week by a white person, I believe. And even it was reported a white person who was affiliated with what they call a neo-Nazi organization. And this is right in the middle of the Brexit, as they've been calling it. I think, as he had mentioned, about leaving the European Union. And a lot of that, in my view, is related to racism, white supremacy. Certainly you all are closer to it than I am, so you can, you know, set me straight if I'm talking crazy. But a lot of the reports that I've seen, that is directly related to we got too many dark people coming into this area of the world, and maybe if we leave the EU, we can do a better job of controlling who is allowed into our area of the world, particularly how many non-white people are allowed to come to our area of the world. But before I get to that, just at least in my opinion, I think Silent Warrior had mentioned the incident in Orlando, Florida, happening about a week or so after the death of Muhammad Ali. And this was a prominent black male, publicly identified as a Muslim, and he paid the price for it, particularly at the prime of his career. And even I think on the compensatory call in yesterday, a caller mentioned that even as he was later in life, as he was older, and with his health conditions, he was still stopped by airport security and that sort of thing, just because he was a practicing Muslim black male victim of white supremacy. But this incident happening where someone who is associated with being what they call Islamic terrorist, I also think it's just massively important. Really, in my view, I think the most fundamental thing that this happened right nearly on the same day, the Charleston, South Carolina church massacre was on June 17th, 2015. This incident taking place last Sunday, which was the 12th. And in my opinion, that would have the Charleston shooting and what white supremacist Dylan Stormroof did, killing nine people, including an elected state official, Reverend State Senator Reverend Clementa Pinckney, that would have gotten a lot more attention this week had it not been for what happened in Orlando. And in my opinion, that just got totally concealed, ignored. I thought that was just huge. I also think it's going to impact, have a just massive impact on the way that racism, white supremacy is discussed moving forward. With the Charleston incident, at least in my opinion, I think that's one of the most important, one of the most significant events that has happened in the last 50 years. Was that brought up, discussed at all internationally over the past week? Was there anything said about, oh yeah, this is the 1 year anniversary since that attack happened?
Can you hear me, Gus?
Loud and clear, sir.
Yeah, as far as I could see, very few, if any, black death incidents when you know, when white people have gone and killed black people. Very few of those incidents ever get mentioned with any kind, you know, on any kind of anniversary in this country. I personally have never heard it. I've seen programs in this country when it came to things like horror, like anniversaries and all that kind of thing. When it comes to Hurricane Katrina, always on late at night. Of black killings in America, to my knowledge, I've not seen anything. I don't know if you have, Mr. Fox.
No, I'm just the same as you regarding any anniversaries of black death. You might get something on Martin Luther King, but regarding something recently, within the last couple of years, you will see something on Hurricane Katrina, but that will be on BBC Two, BBC Four, late at night. But regarding the Charleston shooting, not a peep.
Wow. Silent Warrior, was there anything that you saw about the Charleston attack? Was that discussed at all in Norway?
Not at all.
Wow. Our caller in Canada, just checking all the folks that we have with us right now. Was anything mentioned, any peeps about Charleston?
Nope, just stuff about how, just about basically the Orlando massacre and how Canada is more tolerant than the U.S. That's basically all that ever happens. Typical Canadian white supremacy.
Hmm. I just, in my opinion, I think that is massive. Just as I said, on two fronts, I think it's going to have a just monumental shift. I think moving forward, it's going to be very difficult for anybody, particularly if you are a public figure, to talk about racism, white supremacy without having to include gay rights. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if they even remove the word racism, white supremacy, and just say discrimination or prejudice or tolerance or some of the other, in my view, inaccurate terms that they use to conceal the war of white terrorism that is being waged worldwide. Or they're going to give it the other way, where it's, you got to say racism and classism and homophobia and heteronormativity and blah, 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 blah. They're going to make you do it one of the two ways. We're just not being accurate, specific, that they're whites, white men, white women, white children are waging war on non-white people worldwide. That's white men, white women, white children, white gays, white transgenders, white cisgender, and anything else you want to add. White rich people, white poor people, white disabled people, white elderly people. They're all in a group together and waging war against everyone that they have classified as non-white, especially black people. Andrew, were you going to comment?
Yeah, you know, I totally agree with you, Gus. In England, though, they've made one mistake. They paid money to write something called the McPherson Report, whereby the system admitted of itself that it's institutionally, that the police force is institutionally racist. And that's this. And it put the police force's collective nose totally out of joint, in the sense, you know, in the sense that it really forced them to deal with that report. So what one can do is reference that report literally in the first line of anything anyone's going to say in England when you talk about institutional racism. So, you know, what you can say is, regarding with reference to the McPherson report, which labeled the police as institutionally racist. And then whoever wants to conversate with you then has to entertain that report. What they might say is, oh, that was a long time ago, you know, we've moved on since then. And then you can have a conversation as to where it's moved. you know, we've always with reference to an institute, to a report that they paid for that called the police institutionally racist. And then you could just, you see, what you can do is just chuck verbal mud. You can just chuck that mud out, you know, just keep chucking those words out. The McPherson Report, institutional racism, McPherson Report, institutional racism, and let them, and then leave it with them and let them play around with that. Because I mean, I've done that with certain people, and it causes them to really go around in circles for a little while. Yeah. You know, so they will want to move on. That's really what they want to change the words that are in use. But nonetheless, the McPherson Report is a term, and fairly quite a recent one. It's a term that is in use, and one that they've got to rubbish. And it's quite, you know, I've heard that's quite difficult for them to do. It would have been better for them if they had never paid for that report.
That report, in my view, was paid with the life of Stephen Lawrence, a black teenager in the UK who was killed by a gang of racist whites in 1993. It took them, I think, about 5 or 6 years before they even did that report in response to allegations. Even Nelson Mandela had to get involved, allegations that the Metropolitan Police Department was not adequately investigating who killed this unarmed black teenager. He was 17. His mom, Doreen Lawrence, she's been on the program a couple times, and we talked about that report specifically, but it was paid, in my view, was paid for with the blood of Stephen Lawrence, who was stabbed to death and left to die in a gutter in the middle of London, 1993. And still, everybody that participated in killing him has not been prosecuted. They did eventually lock up two people, but the bulk of the folks were not even prosecuted. Let's see.
Yep, totally agree.
The incident in Orlando, I know they got a lot of attention. I know the BBC, they had big reports, and they even had I report the history of the rainbow flag on the BBC. They went in the history of where that came from. And I was even reminded, Peter Tatchell, the people that are in the UK, did you all hear anything from Peter Tatchell this week coming out to talk about the shootings in Orlando? He's a big LGBT, what they call gay rights activist in the UK. He's been a guest on this program.
Yeah, I heard him talk. I've not heard him talk for a long time, but I heard him talk for a couple of minutes on some, I think that was on the radio, I heard him talk. It was very strange listening to him talk, actually, because he mentioned some organisation that he's got something to do with, whereby where he seeks to have some sort of dialogue with Muslims or something like that. I didn't hear him make very much reference to this killer apparently being gay. I don't remember him making any conversation or making reference to that. Maybe he did. I missed. Maybe that wasn't made known yet. But this guy, unless I got it wrong, what's been on the radio and news here is that this man was gay. Nobody's referenced it as being a gay on gay crime. So I just wonder if he didn't know that this man was gay at the time, if that came out afterwards, or whether or not that doesn't matter to him. Maybe it only matters to him that the guy apparently was this killer was apparently a Muslim, not gay. Maybe for him, gay is neither here nor there. That this man was apparently gay, or that he's been to the club before, and you know, maybe gay on gay crime doesn't mean anything to him, or is not relevant to him, or doesn't mean anything. In this country, there's this thing called black on black crime. So you can have a black on black crime in England. But it's only black on black people it's only mentioned when it's black on black, but not when it's anybody else. So maybe he didn't know that the guy was gay, or maybe I got it wrong. Maybe the guy isn't gay, but that's what I heard on TV, that he's been to a lot of gay nightclubs. So he's a gay Muslim. Was he a Muslim? He wasn't white. You know, maybe he just looked like a Muslim. I don't know. So I heard him talk, but he seemed very subdued to me.
I think that in terms of the gay aspect, I think that has been something that has been disputed. I know the New York Post here, they said they were reporting that he was gay. And I've heard other reports saying that he was on different gay apps and that he had been reportedly seen at these gay nightclubs repeatedly, more than once, people saying that they had seen him and recognized him and knew his face, that sort of thing. So I have seen that reported regularly. And I think it has been reported, like I said, him claiming some sort of affiliation, at least allegedly, with what they call ISIS or Islamic terrorism. So that's the way the narrative is being scripted, that he was some sort of Muslim. But it's been a lot of conflicting information in the reports, which for me just adds further suspicion to my views that I think this event is being used. And it's not to disparage anyone who died there, because a highly disproportionate number of the victims were non-white people, which just further underscores the incorrectness of it. And in my view, how racist white supremacists are most to blame for this. But I think that they are just using this incident for a variety of reasons, some of which we've already touched on. But the gay aspect, the Muslim aspect, that's kind of the way I've seen it reported in the news here and abroad even. Mr. Fox, Silent Warrior, did you have a commentary, I guess, specifically about the gay aspect of it? I mean, has this been played up and discussed as though there's some sort of war on LGBT people and we've got to do something about this? Is this the way that this is being discussed in your different parts of the world?
In London, you had 10,000 people congregate in Soho, and they were singing songs and stuff like that. And you see, whenever you get people killed anywhere, it's a terrible thing. So I think most people would possibly agree with that. So that was filmed on TV. In Soho is notoriously an area in London that historically had a lot of sort of sex shops there, and, you know, this sort of thing. Most of them are now gone. In fact, it's the whole area is a bit of a tourist trap, but you've got to some very prominent gay sort of clubs and or bars up there or whatever. So you had 10,000, well, the news said it was 10,000 people. That's whether it really was, I don't know. But that's what the news said. It was 10,000 people congregating up there. I saw something on TV where the police said, told some gay nightclubs to keep calm and not to worry and this sort of thing and all the rest of it, you know, and this kind of thing. But yeah, it was just televised. It was a massive thing on TV. Where I don't remember seeing very much about somehow it's a sort of a Muslim anti-gay thing. I don't remember seeing any of that. I just remember seeing it on TV whereby, you know, they just filmed the, you know, people congregating in numbers up in the West End, the West End being central London.
Mr. Fox, Silent Warrior, did you have, kind of in terms of what you've seen, is this being portrayed as some sort of attack war on gays?
Oh, most definitely.
Go ahead, Mr. Fox. Go ahead, Mr. Fox.
Yeah, most definitely. That's the narrative which is being pushed. The homosexuals are the victims and they must be protected. So I was expecting to see armed police in a lot of the gay capitals in each of the parts of the country. Because where I am, you have a homosexual village, but I'm not too sure if you've had armed police there. I'm not too sure if you've got armed police in Soho. But that is the narrative being pushed out. But now when you have this MP who's been killed recently, I don't know if that's kind of overshadowed it, because it is in this country, more close to home. So I don't know if that's kind of outshadowed the recent shootings in Orlando. But from what I'm seeing, it doesn't, obviously we live in a system of white supremacy, so anything what happens like this, I always have great suspicion. But if the shooter is a homosexual himself, then that nullifies the homosexual hate then, doesn't it? Well, logically it does, but I don't know if that's the narrative that what they want to get rid of. I think they really want to push the, you know, everyone's against gays. We're just like the black people now. When we discuss race, as you said, we have to nudge in homosexuality as well.
Silent Warrior, were you going to comment?
Yes, thank you. Well, I've been reading as well online. As soon as the incident happened, I thought, you know, I'd read up on it, and within a day or so, you already had sites talking, trying to show that this was a possible false flag. When I've looked at this concern about whether the person is gay and if he's or whether the person is shooting up a club because it has gay people in there, you know, first they said that the father says that the shooter was upset at seeing two gay men kiss. You guys remember that?
Yes, sir.
And then it comes out that then you have about two or three different people saying like, I've like hooked up with him on this gay dating app. And once he even came to me and said, like, hey, do you want to be romantically involved? So that narrative that this was an attack on LGBT was beginning to crumble. But even one thing I've also noticed, that a lot of the people at the club were non-white, were Latino, and some black people. But that isn't being raised up as something that is interesting as well. There, all of these non-white people, if they identify themselves primarily as LGBT, then they get front page status in the fact that they've been killed. So it's been demonstrated that to non-white people who are looking at this, that if you are LGBT, you will have more rights, or this system will show more respect for your life than if you are non-white. So if you're non-white and you're LGBT, you go up a ladder, you go up a rung. But if you're just non-white, you have to stay where you normally are. In terms of status. Just some other things I noticed was that this guy was working for GS4, which is the largest mercenary company in the world. It's known amongst mercenary companies as, from what I read, as the company that you go to if you want some dirty work done, assassinations, killings, and that they are also tied in with the CIA and Black Ops, and you know, I suppose the associated MK Ultra and mind control that can go along with that. Did any of you notice that? It was reported that a black woman said that a teen said to her that, oh, is anyone in this area black? I don't have any problem with the blacks. Did anyone catch that one?
I did.
No, I think.
I saw it in the Daily Mail online. They had that report. It was a black female. She was an intern at Fox. She was like 20, I think, where they did a big report on her. Patience, I'm just forgetting her last. Might have been Patience Carter, I think is her name. But yeah, I did see that report. But even with that, it was that's why I said just the whole nature of this event is just highly suspicious to me, because I saw that. And then at the same time, in the LA Times, they said that he had made all these racist statements about black people to coworkers, about how he didn't like black people and called them niggers and all this other stuff. So it was like, well, wait a minute. You got one person saying that he hated niggers, and then you got another person saying that he was trying to spare black people's lives because they suffered enough. It was just which was par for the week. Lots of contradictions. He's gay. This was a gay hate. But just tons of contradictions, which is standard for the system of white supremacy. Deception.
I suspect two things. Either that he was programmed to make that statement, or that this black female has been told to make that statement by, you know, I mean, she's connected to Fox already, so that makes me suspicious of what she has to say. Or he could have made a statement.
Which but statement?
I doubt that. That, you know, if they're blacks here, I don't want to harm. I don't got no problem with the blacks, which doesn't really make sense, because there were black people who are among the people who are killed.
Exactly. And wounded. That's why I said it's just contradictions all around. And even beyond the individuals who would be classified as black, highly melanated, they said that a sizable, highly disproportionate number of the folks who were killed were Puerto Rican. At least from the photographs that I saw, I think the bulk of those individuals would not be accepted as white, even if they, you know, are not classified as a black person, even if they're not as dark as, you know, Lil Wayne or Lupita Nyong'o. They certainly would not be accepted as white. Let's see. Were there other folks? But before I nab some of the other folks that dialed in, caller in Canada, did you have commentary you wanted to add in on this subject matter?
I think someone's being paid for sure on the way this story is being delivered, and I think that's why there's conflicting accounts. Like, even when it came to the religious question, whether he's Muslim or not, there is one where they talked to a person who talked about him being in a synagogue, but then they got another source, I believe his wife, that he wasn't really that serious about religion. So I just strongly suspect someone is being paid. It's just a matter of who, or compensated in some way or form.
For sure. I know Alex Jones, he did, He did comment about the him working for G4S, this being a massive security firm, and that to him being very suspicious in terms of this may have been something that was orchestrated for whatever purposes that whites wanted to use. And I'm just going to emphasize again, I'll hit Thomas in New York if he has questions on this as well or thoughts he wanted to share on this. But just that, in my view, is massive in and of itself. I think we've talked, many people have talked for a long time about it seems like the most powerful racist white supremacists, it is important to promote heavily, particularly amongst non-white people, individuals classified as black, to promote the whole gay rights agenda. It's just been really in the United States and in many other areas. That's been something that they've been heavily pushing and at the same time badgering, punishing black people who have been resistant to all of this. But I also, just in my view, to be able to obfuscate the Charleston massacre, and even as the caller pointed out, Muhammad Ali and his death and his legacy being someone who fought against racism, to be able to obfuscate both of those, I think is just massive in terms of, and controlling how people talk about racism. You've had so much talk over the last 3, 4, 5 years about racism worldwide. In South Africa, the roads must fall and fees must fall, and student protests all over the world at Oxford and all these other institutions, and everything that's been happening with Black Lives Matter worldwide, Canada, the U.S., worldwide, to now be able to, in my view, really be able to do a solid job saying that it's not just racism. We got to talk about all forms of prejudice and discrimination and intolerance, and they'll come up, I'm sure, with a lot of other words as well. Thomas in New York, did you have commentary you wanted to add? I'll nab other hands if folks had questions or comments they wanted to add to the subject. Just listening.
Good evening,
oh, yes, sir.
Yes, I did want to add something. First thing is, I saw a report in the paper. I can't remember what it was exactly about, but it was about probably the biggest perpetrator of crime, mass shooting against non-white people in Norway. I forget his name, Trevor Brevik or something like that.
Anders Brevik.
He was something, was he sick in jail, or he was being moved, or he was getting some type of perk for being a white person in the situation he's in, that I thought was completely unethical, being the mass shooting that he is did. And I wanted to add that when the Belgium shootings happened, and I think that before there wasn't shootings in Belgium, that was the airport bombing, but you had the shootings in France. And both of those people also claimed to be parts of ISIS. And when you probed into it, you found out that those people were paid to go fight and beat ISIS in the Middle East. And they were just coming back to Syria after that long war. And the fact that this guy is a mercenary, and a lot of the U.S. mercenaries are the people over there posing as ISIS as well. I wouldn't be surprised if he wasn't over there probably engaged in a mission or something and came back, because I think a huge part of what they're doing is they want some of these people to come back radicalized so they can impose their war on terror and take away more people's rights that they have, especially the rights to bear arms. And that's all I want to say, guys. Thank you.
For sure. If other folks have questions, again, this is not our normal. We're not doing 3 hours. This is roughly 90 minutes, give or take 10 minutes either way. But if you have commentary, feel free to chime in if you have a question or other comment topic that you would like to bring up. I know at least in this area of the world, I don't see white people doing anything to take away any guns from white people anytime soon. Like, after Sandy Hook pretty much has convinced me permanently on that one. Like, if you can go and shoot it, that was mostly white children, and white people did not change a thing, not a single law, nothing. I certainly don't see them doing any gun confiscation, but if that didn't do it, it's very difficult for me to see a club with mostly or predominantly non-white people being killed, them changing any gun law. They'll talk about it. It makes, you know, great talking points, and they'll have some debates and, you know, get on 2020 and some other news programs and talk about gun control. And they'll talk about, I've heard lots of comparisons to other areas of the world and saying that they don't have all the access to guns that we have in the U.S. and blah, blah, blah. And we don't have these type of shootings here that in Brazil, too. But white people are not turning loose of that. They are keeping all their guns so they can go out and continue shooting Renisha McBrides and Trayvon Martins and any other, you know, random Negro hooligans that they want to gun down.
You know, Gus, I've been thinking what the point of all this is. You know, how can it benefit? How can this benefit racists, white people, right? And I might be wrong, but possibly it might act to serve the purpose to encourage gay white people, if they're sitting on the fence, if they're sitting on the racist fence, so to speak, it might encourage them to basically join Donald Trump, right, for one. Obviously, worldwide, in this country, it might push them, because obviously you've got a war against, as white people like to say, a war against terror, or a war against non-white people, right? Or if some people want to say, put it in another way, a war against Muslim people or whatever it might be. Either way, it's non-white people. So not that all Muslims are non-white, but the majority are anyway. So it might act if some, you know, I mean, if you get some gay liberals, if there are if any are, it might act to put them firmly in a particular camp. So it might do that. In other words, you know, even though he possibly is gay himself, you know, this terrorist has come and shot us. You know, where should we be? You know, now what should be our response? Who should we support? What camp should we be in as a group of gay people? So it might act to do that. You know, that may or may not be that might be the outcome of this thing. That's what I was thinking when I sort of heard about all this.
I did see some articles where I know Donald Trump came out pretty immediately and said, I was right. I told you, got to keep the Muslims out. This is ridiculous. President Obama has been lame and weak and impotent in dealing with this problem globally. And once I'm in the White House, we are going to go after ISIS. We're going to go after these crazy Muslims, non-white people, and get this taken care of. This is ridiculous. We're not going to be continue to be subject to these type of attacks. Now, there have been a lot of reports this week where folks have said that, you know, a lot of people were not inspired by Donald Trump's remarks. And this was a bad week for him. And he slipped in the polls. I saw more of that towards the end of the week. People saying that they just didn't agree with his commentary and that he was politicizing this event and that's not what we need. And the typical type of rhetorical ethic, as Dr. Marimba Ani would say, in terms of whites trying to sound as though they are about justice and treating everyone correctly. And we're not about warmongering and going after people in some sort of vengeful bloodlust. That's not what we're about, which is totally inaccurate when it relates to non-white people. But I certainly, that was my view all along, that they had been saying that for most of the year. If there was any sort of terrorist attack on U.S. soil, that it would be great for Donald Trump. Any silent warrior, our caller in Canada, Mr. Fox, do you all, we'll get other folks as well. Do you all, if people that are saying that they either have suspicions about this, that they think this could have been orchestrated, a false flag, that white supremacists ultimately may have been behind this, for what purpose? What would be the agenda in doing this? The Orlando shooting and approximately 49 people killed, many more than that shot and injured.
May I speak?
Yes, sir.
I'm still evolving my thinking on trying to figure out how these racist white supremacists might be thinking, but this does occur close towards the I do suspect that white supremacists are practicing occult knowledge, occult thinking. And so I wouldn't be surprised if the fact that the timing of it is close to the solstice. That could be a reason, so that they can gain some extra power. Like, on the real, I don't think white supremacy is just about regular power as we may understand it to be. I'm beginning to suspect that white supremacy is being practiced with some of this occult, is being practiced with some knowledge about things that we do not regularly talk about. So that has to do with that timing of the solstice. And then the other thing that comes to mind is this thing about when the AIDS virus was exploding, the first group of people that they were targeting were gay men in California. So yeah, but I'm trying to figure out a way to look at this holistically, where we think about the U.S. election, Muhammad Ali, what's happening in Europe with the European Union, this war, the so-called war on terrorism, and all of these things probably need to be considered at the same time. I hope I'll be able to come up with some better analysis as I keep thinking about it.
For sure. Mr. Fox, any thoughts on what might be an objective or objectives white supremacists would have, or why they would want to, if we're saying we suspect that they could have orchestrated this, or they have an agenda for how they're going to use this? Any suspicions as to what those objectives might be?
I'm in the same boat. I'm kind of very confused. But from, as I said before, we live in a white supremacist system. So anything what goes down like this is going to help some part of this system. So I don't see, the thing is, if it was a person who was struggling with their homosexuality and actually went in there to kill these people without being a tool of the white supremacists, then why did he do it on that night where a majority of the people in there were non-white, you see? So it's a strange one, because it helps Donald Trump. It helps the homosexual side, the LGBT, I think, or Q or whatever they're called. It helps them because now they're going to be victims. It helps a lot of people, but it's very confusing at the moment. I'm very suspicious.
Can we ask the group a question?
Oh, for sure.
How are we on the election? Who are we predicting? Hillary or Trump?
Oof. I'm kind of always swinging for Trump. I don't think Bernie's going to get in, but then the white supremacists, would they want a woman, even though she's a dedicated white supremacist? She's been, you know, right by her husband's side, he was a supremacist. But would they want the driver's seat? Would they want a white woman in the driver's seat? But then you've got Donald Trump, who's, you know, he's a dedicated white supremacist as well, from his record. But regarding who's going to have the most experience in the White House, I think it will be Hillary. But then majority of the country, the young white supremacists to the old, are right behind Trump. So I see Trump actually winning it. I won't be surprised if he wins it, but I'll be more surprised if Hillary wins. But a part of me wants Trump to win just to shock black people in the world, but especially America, just to, you know, properly highlight that, you know, that country you reside in, the people who call themselves white do not like you. So part of me wants Trump to win, but I do see him winning.
Really appreciate your analysis.
Can I add in on that, please?
Yes, sir.
And I also wanted to make a comment on your last question about the false flag, but the way I see it is that it was what we did, and they didn't expect Trump to make his racist statement to support the stick, but it did, and seeing a white pathology play out, he's feeding right into it, and they're trying to figure out what to do. The Republicans are against him, the Democrats are against him. I've never seen a white man called a racist this much in public ever. They dropped the racist on him like it's not a bad word. He called him a racist. I mean, they're doing everything to try to make people dislike him, and it's just making him more popular because he is a racist and he's feeding right into the white society, and they're all racist. So they have a big problem. So I think they're going to have to give it to him and try to wean him in some way into their agenda. But his agenda seems to be totally different. He has much more of a fascist, nationalist type of agenda, and their agenda is more globalization, you know, let's make everyone a democracy so we can put in the leaders we want and control them that way. His agenda is like, man, I'm just not doing business with these people if they're not white. They're not doing what I said. I'll go back on every agreement. I don't care. And that's scaring the heck out of them. That's what I see.
In my view, at least for right now, I think it's Trump. That's who I think whites will select. And same thing, I think, Lash, as we were talking about this before, in my view, the most powerful white supremacists, these decisions have already been made in terms of who's going to be occupying the White House come January of 2017. This is just, you know, seeing the narrative as it unfolds, how we get there. But I think that it's going to be Donald Trump. I'm of the opinion that a lot of the whites that are talking as though they don't know what to do, or this guy has come out of nowhere and taken over our party, and this is terrible, and this is out of control. I just don't believe that. I think white people lie a lot, especially anytime where they're given the suggestion that they are victims or that things are out of their control. The most powerful whites, that is the biggest fraud in the world in a system of white supremacy. I think Donald Trump has been doing this, has been building for years. While he was making his attacks against President Obama, he was one of the ringleaders of the birther movement that, you know, this guy, how could he be president? He's Kenyan. And I mean, they've been riding with this guy for a long, long time. From some of the things that I've seen, I think it is acceptable to call him a racist, but most of the prominent whites, they, from my observation, they haven't been calling him racist. They've been saying that his statement was racist. And those, in my view, at least, are two different things. To just say that this statement was racist, I think Paul Ryan, he said that his statement was the textbook definition of racism, but he didn't call him a racist. And that's something that I've seen pretty consistently as well, where whites will not indict generally another white person as racist regardless of what they do. They will not say that they are racist. They might say that their statement, what they did or said, was racist. I think that's significant as well. But yeah, I think at least right now, I think Trump's going to win, and we'll still be under a system of white terrorism, even if it's Hillary Clinton. But right now, I think it'll be Trump.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, sir.
In the States, right, how are in the States, where is it perceived? Where is it perceived? Who is it seen? Where is the gay vote? So do gay people, are gays seen as supporting Trump or Hillary? Were the gay community seen as being in support of Barack Obama? I'm asking that because with this thing that's happened in Orlando, by the way, I'm going to Orlando in July. I'm going there. I got family in Miami, but I'm going to be going to Orlando to look at property. But I'm just getting back to the question. What president or potential president are they seen as being in support of prior to the shooting?
And has that changed? And were they in support of Barack Obama? And where are they generally politically? To the left or to the right? Or is it just sort of all over the place? There's no general place.
Don't try to fool us. Hang on one second. You can respond to this too. Don't try to fool us, Andrew. If you're going to Disney World, just say you're going to Disney World. I guess the first part of the about President Obama, they had, if you go online, you can look. There was one of the last issues of Newsweek that was actual in paper. It said the first gay president, and it had a picture of President Obama with a rainbow like halo over his head.
Right. Okay.
In my view, it has, I think there has become increasing support in terms of gays for President Obama because he passed legislation. I think he said himself that he's evolved on the gay issue. And I think increasingly they have been more supportive of him because he's passed legislation and talked about them. I think when he did the second inauguration in 2012, he mentioned Stonewall and some of the other important issues in terms of gay rights. So I think increasingly they have been very much supportive of President Obama. A large number, a sizable portion of individuals who classify themselves as gay or the LGBT members. That's been my perception in terms of the election, in terms of where they are located. I think the typical perception would be that they are what people would call liberal or Democrats. My view is that, I mean, when it comes down to it, what are we classifying as gay? I'm sure there are individuals who are engaged in homosexual activity who do not identify as gay and whatever, whatever. I suspect you probably have a significant chunk who would vote as Republican. I'm sure that typically people would say you should think of them as liberals, Democrats. That's where you would want to vote for. I strongly suspect that you have folks on all ends, just like you have racists who vote Democrat, racists who vote Republican. I'm very certain that you have racists who are voting Republican, racists who vote Democrat. I think people generally would say that the Republican Party has been the one that's been waging what they call this war on gays with the legislation about who can use which bathroom, and they don't want gay stuff in the school system and all that sort of thing. That is true. But I am certain if you look at some of the other political stances, political issues that Republicans vote on, I'm certain that there is a sizable chunk of white people who are gay who would go with those issues. I guess it would also, you'd have probably have to break that out, tease that out a little bit in terms that you have non-white people who classify as gay in terms of what their political affiliation is, and then white people who classify as gay and what their political affiliation is. If we're talking about white people who identify as gay, I suspect you got them on both sides. I strongly would reject the notion that white people who classify as gay would just be overwhelmingly Democrat and not Republican just based on issues that the Republican Party tends to endorse. As of this week, I did see some articles where I think even one article was Gays for Trump, where it was talking about this event had a lot more white gay people coming out and saying that they wanted to support Donald Trump and they wanted him in. They want to keep these Muslims out. And this is crazy. And that sort of thing. I've seen some individuals who are gay who said that, you know, they think Hillary Clinton will support their issues and that she's been down for their rights. I've seen other people who said that they don't think she's done enough. She hasn't been vocal enough. So, I've seen a little bit of both this week in terms of where the support's going, but that's my general assessment. Thomas in New York, you were going to respond to the question as well? Might be in a loud environment.
Sorry, guys. I couldn't find my phone. you said exactly what I wanted to say, just much more eloquently. And, I think that being that this is going to be such a racially polarized election that gay whites, who are the most powerful and the majority of whites in this country, they will vote along the lines of race as opposed to their gender status, as opposed to blacks who I think a lot of blacks would rather be gay than black. They feel as though they'll be treated better. Whites don't tend to think that way. They tend to be white first and whatever else second. And that's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Donald Trump came out this week and said that he would be better for the gays because he would do more to keep Muslims out and that sort of thing. He came out and said this week. Like I said, I think this is one you kind of have to pay attention to. It's been my suspicion that it seems like many, many people of all persuasions are very suspicious of Hillary Clinton. That's why I said I don't think she's going to win. I just get the sense that a lot of people, white people, non-white people, whatever they happen to be, just are distrustful of her for a variety of reasons. Not that people, I think, have an overwhelming trust of Donald Trump, but I get more of a sense of, oh, okay, this guy, we already know what the deal is. Like, he's going to do his racist stance and blah, 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 some of the things that he said and talking about these Muslims and talking about Mexicans and putting the wall up and all this sort of thing to keep dark people out. I get the sense that Hillary Clinton just generates a lot more suspicion from people who just think that she might be trying to deceive them or might not be honest about things. I get that sense from a lot more folks, regardless, white people, non-white people across the board.
Also, a few weeks ago, they tried to, it was so funny because they were doing all this hype about Trump's racist statements against this one and that one. And then out of the blue, they had Caitlyn Jenner, a.k.a. Bruce Jenner, go to Trump's tower. And she was able to use the women's restroom with no problem and as a way to show that Trump was for the LGBTs, wanting to have any bathroom, to use any bathroom you want. So they've been building him up as the new gay president for a second as well.
I did see an article this week where they pointed out as well that Donald Trump has not supported gay marriage. I guess that's been consistent. I think he might still have that stance where he does not support gay marriage. So that is something that, some of the individuals who classify as gay or LGBT have been disgruntled about. But caller in Florida, South Florida, as I understand it. Did you have a question or comment you wanted to add, sir?
No, I literally just tuned in about 5 minutes ago, so I just have to listen to understand or see what the format is, and then I'll make some comments or ask questions.
Right on. Puff, saw your hand as well. I think Puff has been one of the ones where she said she thinks Hillary Clinton is going to win. Are you still sticking with that, or if you had other comments, feel free as well?
Yes, I am, because I believe that the white supremacists are clever enough to cover both sides of the argument. I think that that part on the Republican side, on that Republican debate where Hillary Clinton has said, I'm sorry, where Donald Trump said, I think it was Marco Rubio or somebody, either Jeb Bush or Marco Rubio said that a few years ago, you contributed to her campaign. So it's like they are friends, it looks like they're adversaries, from behind it, but behind the scenes, they are, quote unquote, fast friends. I still believe that Hillary Clinton, really, hello?
Oh, we can hear you.
Okay, wants to be president, and she's going to get her wish, because you can tell by the agenda and all this old type stuff. You notice that they're talking about women more and that type of thing. I just noticed little things in the media there, but at any rate, I wanted to ask a question to the person from England. I wanted to ask the question, how is the National Health Service funded? How is that funded? Hello?
Hello? Yeah, this is Andrea. Can you hear me?
We can hear
you. Yes, I can.
That's a good question. The National Health Service, to my knowledge, is funded through the taxes that they raise free wages. So, in this country, you pay a lot of tax free wages. So, you pay something called what's it called again? National insurance, right? And you pay national insurance and something else. I can't quite remember now. I need to go and have a look at my wage slip. But basically, they pay through the NHS. That's the National Health Service.
and they pay through, they pay for, you know, the upkeep of roads and, you know, public services like that. All of that sort of stuff is paid from your wages. Like, so, so, you know, schools, libraries, swimming pools, you know, public swimming pools, parks, you know, like you guys have got Central Park in New York. Over here, we've got Victoria Park in London, and you've got Hyde Park, where a lot of tourists like to go to Hyde Park and Marble Arch and Trafalgar Square. All of them places are paid for from your taxes, you know, that the government raises from your wages. In certain other European countries, you have to pay more tax. They pay a lot more tax in certain European countries, and they got a better health service. So in some European in England, the current government is what they want to do. They want to get rid of the National Health Service, right? So they want to basically. So the argument is, we want, or rather. They don't do it. They do it through the back door. So what they're doing, they're running it down. They're making it rubbish so that people complain about it. And then the solution that they come up with is basically that you pay for it, you know. And so they say stuff like, you know, we won't tax you anymore. We'll tax you less. But what they're not saying is that we're going to tax you less, but the service you're going to get is going to be rubbish, you know. So what they're doing, they're appealing to the lowest denominator, which is we won't tax you. You understand? And so stupid people will, and I'm using the word stupid people say, oh, that's good, I'm not going to get taxed very much. But what the government's not telling them is that the service you're going to get is going to be rubbish. Simple as that. You're going to have to wait ages to get some sort of operation. Yeah, but anyway, to cut long story short, it's paid through your wages. And I know that in America, you guys have something called Medicare, as I've heard of it.
Yes.
And as I've heard that Barack Obama had problems getting that through or something. I don't know the ins and outs, but had problems getting that through. But I mean, personally, I think the National Health Service is a good thing. That's my opinion, because basically, if you're poor, there's certain things you can go and get, you know what I mean? And if you haven't got that, then if you haven't got that and you're poor, then you're finished. Basically, you as you know, you're dead today, as Flavor Flav said, you know.
I just wanted to ask real quick. One of our female callers in the UK, she couldn't participate today. She had a work obligation, unfortunately, but she had just recommended, BBC had a documentary called Last Whites of the East End. This was just on the last couple of weeks, and they were basically moping and complaining that, you know, all these dark people have come in and we don't recognize this place anymore and it's terrible and, you know, we got to move to a different part of England where it's more white people. Do you think this move to make the health system there rubbish and to say, well, you won't have to pay as much, you'll pay lower taxes, but it'll be really bad, so then they can get rid of it? Do you think that could be a correlation with the influx of non-white people?
Yes. Simple as that. Yes, it is. You see, with an influx of non-white people, right, the idea is that you don't need National Health Service anymore. Yeah, simple as that, you know, or at least if we have one, it will be substandard. You know, it's as simple as that. You know, it's a direct correlation, in my opinion. Same as in education as well, you know, same as that. You know, we need, you know, if you've got more non-white people getting good qualifications and moving into the job market with proper qualifications, then what you've got to do, you've got to move the goalposts, you've got to change the criteria, you know, of the actual exams, run down the schools, you know, or anything really, anything. It's funny because on the one hand, without going into it, exam results are going up, but on the other hand, they're changing the criteria in exams. You know, the actual exam boards are shifting the mark, you know, the grade boundaries, and so all of it is the same sort of thing. It's all the same sort of program. But getting back to the health service anyway, NHS, in my opinion, the answer is yes.
Fascinating.
Are these non-white people black?
Yeah, yeah. So you see, in this country, you know, you have a lot of non-white people. You've got African Caribbean people. You've got people that have just come from, when I say just come, you've got people that have come in the last sort of 40 years from the African continent. You've got lots of Asian people from India, Bangladesh, Pakistan, who live in places like Leicester, Luton, Wembley, Southall, places like that. And obviously you've got a lot of Eastern Europeans who are, some of them are Muslim. Some of these Eastern Europeans are actually Muslim. Not all Eastern Europeans, believe it or not, are white as well. When you look at them, not all of them actually look white. A lot do. So Polish immigrants that have just come to this country, they look white. But you've got some Eastern Europeans, when they come over, you know, you look at them, they don't actually look like white people. They look, to me anyway, they look more like sort of Turkish people or sort of North African people, you know, so.
The Tsarnaev brothers, folks remember from the Boston bombing, I think that issue came up there. I think they would be classified as quote-unquote Eastern Europeans, and we had that whole program about that, about whether or not they are classified as white. To me, if you get a look at them, some of the photos that I saw, they looked a little on the tawny side, that they wouldn't exactly be accepted as white people by a sizable chunk of folks, I suspect. The caller at 9516, did you have a question or comment you wanted to add in as well?
Hello?
Yes, ma'am, we can hear you.
Yes, I wanted to ask about the flooding in Ghana. Is the person from Africa, is that person on the line?
Not flooding in Ghana.
I just wanted to...
Not today, unfortunately. We did our caller in South Africa. We're going to see if we can get him back on the program, although that is a considerable distance from Ghana, but it's closer than all of us. But, yeah, he's not with us today.
Oh, I just wanted to know what the status is, with the people, like how are they getting help? You know, as I heard, it was really, really bad over there. I haven't seen anything about, you know, GoFund, Ghana, or anything like that. So that's why I was concerned.
I heard that as well, that it was really bad. And I haven't seen that either. The shooting in Florida has dominated everything. I haven't seen nearly as much attention on that, and let's send some humanitarian aid and troops and food and all the other resources, medical attention. I haven't seen any great deal of focus on that either. Let's see. Just double making sure I didn't miss anything. Caller in Canada, I know you had been muted for a second. Did you have commentary you wanted to add in as well? We're kind of getting closer to the end. Did you have anything you wanted to make sure you added in?
I was just going to say, I completely agree with what Thomas in New York was saying, and that's why I think Trump is probably going to win, and I think this Orlando incident pretty much cemented it for him. I think it did, and it's going to work where gays are definitely going to think, well, white people who are gay are definitely going to think white first. I think that's exactly what's going to happen, because I think it just got him out of a hole because of that other public issue that he had. So I think that's what's going to happen. So it's pretty much set for him, in my view. Oh, that's it.
All right. Right on. Did anybody that's with us, did you all get to see that documentary, The Last Whites of the East End? It was on the BBC, I think, within the last few weeks or so. Did anybody get to see that?
Yes, I did. That was an excellent documentary.
For folks that are in the States, I would encourage checking it out, because I think, in fact, I saw it. I downloaded it, but I saw it's on YouTube if you want to check it out. Last Whites of the East End, BBC. There were people who were commenting who were saying, oh, man, this is terrible. It's the same thing here in the States. And all these dark people, basically, is what they were saying. That sort of thing, I think that sentiment would also fuel Donald Trump. In my view, what the complaints that they had in that documentary. We got all these dark people, all these Muslims and foreigners, and I was even going to make a sound clip of it. They were just complaining, and they were really old. Like when they talk about the aging white population, that is also a part of this white genetic annihilation, Dr. Francis Kress-Welsing, that you are having the white population because they're not having as many children, that the aggregate white population is getting older. You could see it in that documentary because you had all of these older white people complaining about all of these dark people in their area of the world. But in my view, that is the sort of thing that will further aid Donald Trump. Like, there's too many dark people. We got to get them out of here. We got to do something about this. This is ridiculous. I think that will strongly push him to the White House. And I think that sentiment that you saw in that documentary, I think that could be leading why there's this push to, hey, we need to get out of the EU. We got to do what we can to look out for our own, to keep these dark people out of it. This is ridiculous. Am I in error, or is that what is kind of fueling? Is that one of the main things that is pushing people to say, hey, we need to get out of the EU because there's too many dark people coming here?
Yeah, you're spot on. You know. Sorry, did somebody want to say something?
Yeah, I also wanted to say that I think you're right on the money. And when I think about Dr. Welsing's cycle of white supremacy, you have establishment, maintenance, then expansion, then refinement, and then it goes back to establishment again. I believe that we are witnessing a worldwide re-establishment of the principles of white supremacy and maintenance. We're in that establishment maintenance part of the cycle now. During Obama, when Obama was elected, 2008, then we were in refinement mode right there. Expansion and refinement. But right now, I think we're in establishment and maintenance.
Can I be heard?
Oh, yes, sir.
Yes, I based on what I had been hearing, I just wanted to express my comments, I guess specifically with the quote-unquote election in this part of the world, specifically the one that for the quote-unquote office of President of the United States. What keeps resounding in my brain computer is global system of racism, white supremacy, global system of racism, white supremacy, according to Mr. Neely Fuller Jr. And what that tells me is that there's only one government, and the name of it is white supremacy. Therefore, these different offices, like the one that I prior mentioned, the Prime Minister of England, the King or Queen of some place, are basically insignificant. We're under a global system of racism, white supremacy. The people who control the global system of racism, white supremacy, meaning who has the muscle and who is going to say and do what is necessary to maintain that system, even if a non-white black person is in a position, they are not in charge. Ultimately, if the person or persons that are in charge are white people who have made the choice to practice racism. If the system of white supremacy thinks that Mrs. Clinton is the best choice to maintain and keep in a refined way that global system, then she would be the president. If it applies to Mr. Trump. Even in these individual positions, the system of racism, white supremacy is so insulated that it doesn't depend on that one person to say or do anything in particular that's going to further their ambition, their evil ambition, their stopgap measures. I hear that they talk about this person has his hands on the button. There is no one white person that has their hand on the button, but it is a white person that would be the one under the global system of racist white supremacy that would impose any direct violence on non-white people, or even some white people if they choose to, because that has happened before. So that's basically is an idea that I have. Now, there is possible that Mrs. Clinton would be the president, but I certainly won't be surprised if Mr. Trump ends up being the president. And with Dr. Welsing's explanation of it, I'm in total agreement with her. And also the reason why I wouldn't be surprised if he'd be president, because I spent 27 and a half years around white people on a 24-hour basis. And what he says is no different than these people that I worked with. And what their desires were, what their ambitions were, and what their thoughts were in as far as a white person and what position that they have with the world in itself. So I would be surprised if he ends up, because voting in this part of the world is private enough that you can make that selection and don't have to defend it physically for yourself. Whereas in some other places, you know, you can, you know, voting is quite dangerous. And what I call professional voting anyway, is quite dangerous. But here it's not that way. And so no matter what a person says publicly, they can do something different when it comes to voting. And those are just my thoughts. Global system of racist white supremacy. And that's the only government. Thank you.
Can I quickly say something?
If you could speak up a little bit, that would
be
helpful.
Can you hear me?
That is better.
Yeah. What Thomas in New York said a couple moments ago regarding Hillary and Donald Trump. Hillary, I see her being more on the global white supremacist business side of the game, but I see Donald Trump being more domestic. So I think he was right on that. If Donald Trump does get in the White House, if he continues to either neglect the global business side of white supremacy, then I could see him as a president being assassinated.
I see the same thing. What I've been seeing, Hillary Clinton represents a neoliberal ideology, which if you're a Republican and you are neoliberal, they call you a neocon, a neoconservative. And that's globalization, using democracy, using laws and using the UN. And his whole agenda thus far is he's not dealing with people unless they're going to go back on these treaties these neocons and neoliberals got done, you know. So I just don't see it as clear cut as him being selected. I think she's been selected, and this is sort of the way Dr. Umar put it when he came on the show. They're going to have a big problem if they give her that presidency. They're going to have a lot of uprisings because she has the people and she has the power behind her, but he has the people behind him. I kind of see it that way. Also wanted to say, it's a shame that they're treating, I'm going to watch that documentary as soon as the show ends, because the British wouldn't have all the power and wealth they have if it wasn't for them raping and pillaging the lands of those people that they now don't want in their land and they don't want to take care of now that they're here. It's just how the system plays out. Wouldn't have anything, wouldn't have none of the freedoms they have to do what they do, wouldn't have the military power and might if they hadn't gone and took the resources from Africa, the Caribbean, and India, and Asia. And now that those people are doing what they're supposed to do, come to Britain, who took over them, Now they want to bail out on them. It's just typical white behavior.
It's amazing how the white genetic self-defense system kicks in no matter where it is globally. England, US, South Africa, Australia. Soon as it feels threatened, they just react. It's amazing.
And in this last whites in East Ender, you also see the same white genetic survival impulse kicking in. But you know, what's so funny about that title is that when you think about the movies, The Last Mohican, when you had this white person playing the last Indian, in like the adopted son of this last Indian, that was a cute movie. Yeah, The Last Samurai with Tom Cruise. That was another cute movie that was like praised and so on. And nobody, there's no uproar about racism there from white people. But in the reviews on this last whites in the East End, you can see like white people and complaining that this is a racist documentary, that they are giving neo-Nazis arena for their views. So it seems as if they don't want the truth to come out. But about this election, it makes me think about Bush versus Al Gore. Because back in when that election was going on in 2000, I thought that Al Gore would have won. He seemed to be the more qualified candidate compared to Bush, although Bush had the, you know, the family connection. So I'm wondering if we'll see some. I mean, it really, and he, Al Gore won the popular vote, but they went all the way to the Supreme Court and gave Bush the victory. So when white supremacy is ready to kick in and let their selection win, the selection wins. Right now on Real Clear Politics, Clinton is ahead by 5 percentage points. That might change. But I just thought it was interesting to compare Clinton and Trump versus Bush and Gore in 2000. When they're ready to make the choice, they make the choice. But going back to what I just, if you give me a few seconds, what I said about this, we seem to be in this phase of establishment and maintenance. And Trump is definitely pushing that establishment and maintenance vibe very much, right? And it could be very much, well, that his role in the white supremacist system is to do that. But who knows, they may only need one or two years of that. And that time period could just be this election period where this establishment, you know, where this is being, he gets all of this free press to say what he wants. And that is spreading the rhetoric of the establishment of white supremacy. And then the most powerful white supremacists might say, okay, Trump, you did your bid. Now we're going to bring our girl in. And then Clinton comes in with the expansion, because she's got that experience to push it internationally, and refinement. So it could be a 1-2 punch actually, because it doesn't really matter. It may not matter so much who's in the presidency, but all of the press and dialogue and the way people are thinking in America and around the world, that is also part of the. That is also part of how you rule a group of people, like how you get them to think and discuss and get their attitudes to change. For example, when Obama was running for a good year and a half, keep hope alive, you know, all of that refinement of white supremacy was being pushed and worked on hardcore before he even got into the office, so people could start thinking that we're in a post-racial society. So the presidency is not just when you're elected. It's the year or two before you're elected, how you condition the minds of people. And I'm with the feeling that this is a planned move between Clinton and Trump, that Trump would get his day in the sun, and he'd be able to parlay his popularity if he loses to some business venture. I don't think Trump really wants to be the president. I've seen places where they say that he would get other people to do, he would be like the chairman and he would get a CEO to do that president work. So it would be interesting to see who his VP will be, if you'll find a Dick Cheney kind of character to be his vice president when he decides to, when he goes further in the campaign, so that if he does get elected, if they do, if the most powerful white supremacists do choose him, that the person who is his vice president will be, or the other people in his cabinet will be doing more of the work, and he just gets to continue talking that good mess like he's been doing. My money is still on my girl, Hillary, though.
Right on. That will wrap us for the program. I think Keep Hope Alive, that was Jesse Jackson. I think President Obama's slogans was Yes, We Can, Hope, and Change. I think he was just going with lots of the one words, hope, change, and then ultimately, yes, we can. But yeah, I think that was Jesse Jackson was Keep Hope Alive. We will be here on Tuesday. Dr. Niana Rasayan will be with us. He's been on the program many times before. I'm sure we will talk about, get his views on it. Told him when I invited him on the program, it was before the Orlando shooting happened. It seems almost every time we have him on the program, there is some shooting that takes place. This has been the case for years. Even the very first time that we had him on the program, they were literally executing Troy Davis when we went live with him coming on the broadcast. But some of the other times, I think he was on right after the Sandy Hook shooting. We had him on within days of the Aurora, Colorado shooting back in 2012. The shooting in Wisconsin, when the white terrorists went and shot up the Sikh temple, we had him on the broadcast then. It's, I don't know what that is, but that it has just lined up that way that we have had him on the program. I think we even had him on within hours of Chris Kyle, American Sniper, when he was gunned down. I don't know what it is, but it just seems like every time that we send out an invitation, that's what goes down. But I'm sure he'll give some views, thoughts on the situation in Orlando, the one-year anniversary of Charleston. I know he definitely wanted to talk about the death, because we haven't had him on the program since the transition of Dr. Frances Cress Welsing, to get his thoughts on her, the passing of Prince and Muhammad Ali. I know he had some interesting views on those three deaths in particular this year, and what that means for the system of white supremacy. He will be here on the solstice, no less, on the 21st, this Tuesday. Normal broadcast time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. I think for folks across the pond, that would be very late that evening, but it'll be in the archives if folks want to check it out down the road. But we'll be here on Wednesday. The workplace racism segment will be Thursday, and medical apartheid will be this coming Friday. We actually should have a guest on from South Africa sometime within the next week or so. She did a segment on Al Jazeera where they were talking about current issues of white supremacy in South Africa, as well as the 40-year anniversary of the Soweto student uprisings of 1976. She should be here. We'll be good to get her thoughts, as well as the assessment of all of the hubbub about the Truth and Reconciliation Commission from 20 years ago as well. But that'll be obviously earlier than our normal broadcast time as well. Be good to hear her thoughts on Christopher Clark, a well-meaning white man who was just with us this past Monday. Thanks to all the folks who dialed in, caller in Canada, Silent Warrior in Norway, Mr. Fox, Andrew joining us from the UK, all the folks who dialed in stateside, Thomas in New York, retired firefighter, I think Puff was with us as well, a female caller, I think she's in Wisconsin. Great to hear from everyone. Hope you all are enjoying a spectacular Sunday. I'm not really into the holidays and such, but folks that are into that, for sure, happy Father's Day. Just try to have a constructive day as best you can and be prepared for another day of terrorism tomorrow coming up on Monday. If you have questions, you can't find something in the archives, you have a guest suggestion, you just have a problem in general, gripe, complaint, feel free to drop an email untiljustice@gmail.com. untiljustice@gmail.com. You can also hit us on Twitter @untiljustice. all together, no spaces or anything, at Until Justice. We're on Facebook also. If you have a problem, and we'll try to be responsive as soon as possible. Invest if you think the program is constructive, racism-notes.blogspot.com, racism-notes.blogspot.com. Listener-supported counter-racist radio. PayPal button is in the top right corner. If you are not into PayPal, drop us an email. We will get you a physical mailing address. Again, thanks to all the folks who have supported, invested down through the years. Seven plus. Hope it has helped folks get a better understanding of what white supremacy racism is, how it works, what it means to be white. And thanks to all the folks, Mr. Fox and many others who have uploaded content to YouTube to help promote the broadcast and hopefully help folks get a better understanding of the problems we face as black people, victims of racism. With that, we should be here about 48 hours. Dr. Rossayon, looking forward to hearing from him again. As I say consistently, sobriety would be best under conditions of white terrorism. With all of the things that are happening and being waged against us worldwide, we want to be lucid, clear thinking so we can make phenomenal decisions, counter racist moves to neutralize racist man, racist woman, racist child. Certainly, if you're going to be in a vehicle, you do not want to be intoxicated. You never know when it'll be Daniel Holtzclaw, Darren Wilson, who is pulling you over. They can easily take your life or just make a lot of unnecessary and easily avoidable problems for us. If you're going to be a driver, passenger, even as a pedestrian, let's be sober. Let's do everything we can to minimize contact with enforcement officials, including buckle up every time you are in a vehicle. Simple things we can do to solve some of these problems. With that, we'll be here on Tuesday. Thanks again, everyone, for tuning in. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cow signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
Man, I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.